We're going to continue our series on the Ten Commandments this morning, and we're going to be looking at commandment number 9, which is found in Exodus chapter 20 and verse 16. Exodus 20, 16 says, "Thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor." I don't suppose I have to convince you that we are living in a cultural environment here in our society that has deteriorated in many respects as far as morality and righteousness is concerned. And I think probably none of the conditions in our world or in our culture illustrate that deterioration as much as the problem of lying. It's everywhere. I don't know if I wholeheartedly swallow this statistic or not. It sounds incredible to me. But Laura Schlesinger, in her book on the Ten Commandments, gave a quote from a New York Times newspaper article that was printed way back in 96. Now, that's not long ago. When I said way back, some of you probably were thinking when you were born, but we're not going that far back. But 1996 has been a while ago, and this is what the article said in 1996. 91% of the population confess that they regularly don't tell the truth. Now, they didn't call me. I don't think they called you. You know how polls are done. They do, 2,000 or 3,000 people as a sampling, and then they extrapolate those percentages out for the whole nation. So either it's really bad in our culture, or else they just got a really bad group of people they called. But it was hard for me to fathom. 91%. Admitted that they regularly do not tell the truth. Mary Moore gave me this when she came in this morning, and I had heard this before a long time ago. It's really cute and to the point of our discussion today. One sunny day, four high school boys couldn't resist the temptation to skip classes. The next morning, they explained to a teacher that they had missed her class because their car had a flat tire. To their relief, she smiled and said, "Well, you missed a quiz yesterday, so take your seats and get out a pencil and paper." She waited as they sat down and got ready for the quiz, and then she said, "First question, which tire was flat?" I suppose they learned a lesson about that time. David Bubb, in his book called Living Life at a Perfect 10, quotes Walter Scott, who wrote, "What a tangled web we weave when first we practice to deceive." Then someone else by the name of J.R. Pope added these words, "But when we've practiced quite a while, how vastly we improve our style." I'm afraid that's true for a lot of people. I have met them, and I'm sure you have, who can lie so well they would pass a polygraph. Psychologists refer to them as pathological liars because it is so much a part of their nature that to tell a lie doesn't raise their blood pressure, it doesn't raise their pulse, it doesn't make them nervous. It doesn't do anything. I'm glad I never got to that point. I'm glad that I was the type of person that, in most all cases, when I told a lie to my parents especially, my face turned red, my blood pressure went up, my pulse accelerated, my voice quavered, and And they said, "Are you telling the truth?" And I suppose I would say, "Yes." I don't know. But bending the truth and stretching the truth and hedging the truth, isn't it amazing what all terms we come up with for lying? All of those have reached epidemic proportions in our world. I think I've already shared, in fact, I'm sure I've already shared how alarmed my wife was one day when she came home from school, and she taught at a Christian school over in Ohio before we moved here. She said, it just bothers me to know that there are kids that missed school yesterday because they didn't have their research paper ready to turn in for some class. And their parents let them stay home from school to finish their research paper because it wasn't ready on the day that it was due. And then the next day when they returned to school, their parents wrote an excuse that said, "Please excuse my child for being sick." And the kids were telling one another that they were home finishing their paper, but their parent had written they were home because they were sick, so that they would be an excused absence. If they hadn't been an excused absence, they would have gotten a zero on their paper. Now, these are people that profess, majority of them anyway, profess to be Christians, profess to be saved, think nothing of lying on an excuse to keep their child from getting a zero. Well, God reveals to us in the ninth commandment that he has a different plan in mind for our lives, doesn't he? And God's standard and God's will is that we abstain from lying. And so, if you're following along the outline, you'll see on the notes there that, and this is basically the way we've been treating each of the commandments. We talk first of all about the negative meaning that is stated, and then I try to present a positive principle behind each commandment, because I firmly believe, as well as other people, that this isn't original with me. I got it from other writers and authors. I believe that all of the commandments, all 10 of them, provide the foundation for the principles for living that we find in the rest of the Bible. They provide the basic framework and foundation for all of the commandments of God that are revealed in his word and all of his guidelines and principles that he wants us to live by. And so we're going to talk about the positive principle behind the commandment. And then in the exposition part, we're going to basically ask the question, how does this commandment relate to everyday life? How does it relate to my life? What can I learn and gain from this information today? So let's talk about the negative meaning, and it's very simple. God is saying, do not give a false testimony against another person. I want to briefly define a few of the words that are used here in the Hebrew text. The word false is a Hebrew word that means lie, falsehood, or deception. It is derived from another word that means to deal falsely. It is used of words or activities which have no basis in fact or reality. In the ninth commandment, it involves an accusation made against another citizen that is not based in fact. It is false. It's not real. When the Ten Commandments are repeated over in Deuteronomy chapter 5, it's been a while since I've mentioned that. I'm not sure you're all aware of that, but all of the Ten Commandments are repeated in Deuteronomy 5. And in that reading of the Ten Commandments that Moses gave to the people of Israel right before he died and they went into the land of Canaan, there's a little different word used in Deuteronomy, and it's a word that means vanity or worthlessness. It designates anything that is unsubstantiated, unreal, or worthless, either materially or morally. The word witness is a word that means witness or testimony. It can refer either to the person that is giving the witness, or it can refer to the testimony itself, which we would call, in legal terms today, we would call that evidence that's presented in the case. The word is also derived from another word that means to return, repeat, or do again. And some scholars think the connection is that to be a testimony or to be a witness means to reiterate and repeat an accusation or facts about whatever you're testifying on. And so a witness is one who emphatically affirms his testimony by repeating it and by reiterating it. And so based on those meanings of those words, the negative meaning of this command primarily condemns the giving of false and misleading information or testimony in a court setting against another person. That's the primary interpretation. The positive principle that we find underlying this command, I think, is very simple. Truth is sacred. Truth, that means truth is of high value. God understands truth to be something that is necessary and a requirement for a stable relationship, for a stable society, for everything in this created universe. Truth is a necessary ingredient. Truth is sacred. Without the element of truth being a given, being a presupposition, being a an understood quality, there would be no stability at all. I think, and I've not read this anywhere authoritatively anyway, but just based on things that I have read, I think one of the reasons why you would find so much instability in societies that we would refer to as uncivilized, or at least far less civilized than ours is, I think one of the reasons for that is because those factions and tribes and individuals within those more primitive cultures do not have any concept of truth being a necessary ingredient for stability in a relationship and a society. Truth is sacred, dear friends. And part of the reason why we are seeing our society unravel the way that it has been, I am convinced, is because people can't be trusted anymore according to what they say. And that is certainly sad, isn't it? So how does this commandment relate to our lives? Well, first of all, this commandment demonstrates the nature of God. The reason why truth is sacred is because God is a God of truth. Several months ago, I did a series of messages on the attributes of God, discussing his nature and character. We talked about the fact that God is a God of truth. The Bible said that in some of the verses that the girls read earlier from the Psalms, talks about God is a God of truth. Now that not only means that God tells the truth, but that also means that God's nature is completely consistent with himself. There's a consistency, there's an authenticity, there's a reliability and faithfulness about God because he is truth. That's his nature. And God wants us to be like him, dear friends. That's not a surprise, is it? That's not a shock for us today, is it? God wants us to be like him. God wants us to cherish the truth because he is truth. And so this commandment emphasizes and demonstrates the nature of God. We are expected to emulate God in our character and in our way of life. The Bible makes it very clear, dear friends, that when we practice deceit, when we tell a lie, When we give a false accusation or any of those things that fall into that broad category, we are not acting like our Father in heaven. In fact, Jesus was pretty clear, we're acting as if we have a different Father. Let me read you what he said. In John chapter 8, verse 44, this is what he said to some of the religious people in his day. You, talking to them directly, you are of your father, the devil. And the desires of your father you want to do. He was a murderer from the beginning and does not stand in the truth, because there is no truth in him. When he speaks a lie, he speaks from his own resources, for he is a liar and the father of it. Dear friends, as kindly as I know how, I want to remind us today that whenever we choose, or if ever we choose, to tell a lie, we are witnessing to the world that our father is the devil, not God, according to what Jesus said. The devil is the father of lies. And he said when people emulate the devil by telling lies, they are acknowledging that they are not trying to be like God. Wow, that's pretty close, isn't it? The second thing that this commandment teaches us is it condemns perjury in all of its forms. Now, I assume we all know that the word perjury is a legal term that means to lie under oath in a court setting, in a court of law. This point basically reemphasizes what I was saying earlier when I was talking about the definitions of those words. The primary interpretation of this text is to understand it in a courtroom setting. It is true that people will lie in court for the purpose of trying to get themselves out of trouble. Others will lie in court for the purpose of trying to get someone into trouble. And we've probably seen it both ways, haven't we? In either case, lying distorts the administration of justice in the society. Again, I say what I said earlier. Without truth, there's no basis for stability in the society. More primitive cultures who have no concept of the requirement and the necessity and the sacredness of truth have no judicial system that even comes close to ours. Now, I acknowledge our judicial system many times lacks because of this very problem. Because people do lie in court and some of them get away with it. But the crime or the sin of perjury is wrong because it distorts justice and it promotes the practice of evil in the world. It goes completely contrary to the nature of God. He is perfectly just in all of his ways. And he desires that same quality of justice and virtue to be a part of our lives and be a part of our society and our world. One writer has stated that justice is truth in action. Truth in action. The whole concept of justice, when I was doing the series of messages on the attributes of God and I was talking about his mercy and his justice, I was emphasizing the fact that all of God's mercy and justice and his judgments, even at the end of time, will be done with absolute truth. There will be no chance whatsoever for God to make a mistake when it comes to judgment. The guilty will be declared guilty and receive their just rewards and punishment. The righteous will be declared righteous and will receive their reward in the judgment of God. And so in our culture and in our world, the foundation of truth is necessary for the administration of justice and equity in the culture. Now in the Old Testament, Whenever someone purposely brought a false accusation against another citizen, you know what happened to them? In Deuteronomy chapter 19, it says this: the judges shall make careful inquiry, and indeed, if the witness is a false witness who has testified falsely against his brother, then you shall do to him as he thought to have done to his brother. So you shall put away the evil from among you. I wonder if that would curb some of the perjury that goes on in our country. What that's saying is, the way they applied that law that God gave them in Deuteronomy, if the accusation made against a fellow citizen was a false accusation, but the normal punishment for that crime was death, then the person who made the false accusation was to be put to death. Whatever the punishment was that that crime called for, the person who made the false accusation had to pay that price, had to experience that punishment. Proverbs 19, verse 9 says, a false witness will not go unpunished, and he who speaks lies shall perish. Let me hurry on to the last one. This commandment promotes honesty as a way of life. The quality of honesty and integrity must be a vital part of our conduct and our character, dear friends. Without it, there's no real hope for a meaningful relationship that's built on trust and mutual respect. I remember, just as a brief example or illustration, back shortly after 9/11, September 11th in 2001, shortly after that attack on our nation, I had to go to a training conference out in Colorado. Well, the amount of time that I had to get there and to get back wouldn't allow me to drive, so I had to fly. And it was less than a month, I think it was about a month or maybe less than a month later, after 9/11. I don't know about you, but sometimes I can be a big baby. And I'll have to admit, I was going to say nervous, but I think it'd be more appropriate to say I was scared. When I went on that, I was looking at everybody on that plane, watching for one false move. And I was going to bite their ankles or whatever I could do. And as I thought, I sat there in my seat on the plane and I began thinking and pondering that. And I thought, you know, we take it for granted, but how much every day we depend on the trustworthiness, the truthfulness, the reliability of our fellow citizens. All it would take is for one deceiving, conniving, untrustworthy mechanic to sabotage an airplane. Now, it may not be quite that easy, because I assume they have several that are charged with the responsibility of double-checking each other's work. But the point is, every day we rely on the assumption that people can be trusted, that they are reliable, they're trustworthy, that you can depend on their word. Without it, there's no basis for a meaningful relationship. You can't have a marriage between two people that has any value at all and lasts very long at all if you don't have mutual trust, if you can't believe the words of your spouse. There's no basis for a meaningful relationship. And on the list goes. Honesty and integrity and virtue are requirements in order to have a stable society, in order to have a stable relationship. Now, I've already told you that the literal interpretation of this commandment deals more specifically with a courtroom setting. But this is the only commandment that addresses the issue of lying at all, or the issue of truthfulness. And I believe that all of the commandments, as I said at the very beginning of the message, all of the commandments form the foundation, the groundwork for every other principle that God teaches us in His Word. And there's plenty of verses throughout the Bible where God tells us to tell the truth, where He condemns lying in our everyday interaction and associations with one another. And so I believe that this commandment is promoting honesty as a way of life. But let me share a few New Testament passages if I could. In Matthew chapter 12, Jesus said, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. A good man out of the good treasures of his heart, an evil man out of the evil treasure brings forth evil. What Jesus seems to be saying there is that if a person has a problem telling the truth, it's because it's a deeper heart issue. They have a heart that is deceptive. Just like I believe it was Jeremiah that said, the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Listen to what the Lord and then the Apostle James had to say. In Matthew chapter 5, the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus says to them, you have heard that it has been said by them of old time, you shall not forswear thyself, but shall perform unto the Lord thine oaths. But I say to you, swear not at all, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne, neither by the earth, for it is footstool, neither by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. Neither shalt thou swear by thy head, because thou canst not make one hair white or black. Let your communication be yea, yea, nay, nay, for whatever is more than these comes of evil. And then James kind of echoes those words in his letter. And he says, above all, brethren, swear not by heaven or the earth or any other oath. Let your yea be yea and your nay be nay, lest you fall into condemnation. Now, what were they talking about? Well, let me tell you what the practice apparently was. Apparently, maybe in court, but even in general interaction with people from day to day, transacting business or whatever it might be, if somebody was saying something to someone else and they wanted to make sure they really believed them, they would swear by an oath to substantiate what I've just told you is the truth. And Jesus and James both seem to be emphasizing the fact that ought not be necessary for Christian people. It ought not be required for you to swear by an oath in order to get someone to believe that what you are telling them is the truth. Whenever we talk to people from day to day, whenever we carry out business transactions with our fellow citizens and with merchants, all of our affairs of life ought to be so that people know they can trust what we say without having to use an oath. That's what it's talking about. Those verses emphasize, dear friends, how important it is for us to live a life of honesty and integrity. And then I would also refer to the golden rule. I think it applies to this issue as well. The golden rule comes from Matthew 7, verse 12. It's worded just a little differently than what we have said the golden rule is, but it means the same thing. Whatever you want men to do to you, do also to them. And then Jesus said, this is the law and the prophets. In other words, everything that God has revealed to us about behavior and conduct from the law and the prophets can be summed up in one little statement. Do unto other men as you would have them to do unto you. Now, I don't know if I've said this here or not, but years ago, I heard someone talk about the silver rule. I don't know if you've ever heard of the silver rule. I had never heard of it before. But some people or some cultures emphasized the silver rule, or at least what some have called the silver rule. And the silver rule is, you might say, one step lower than the golden rule. And the silver rule basically is, don't do to someone else any evil that you would want them to do to you, that you would not want them to do back to you. Don't treat anyone else in a bad way that you would not want them to treat you that way. The golden rule turns it around and makes it positive and says, do unto others as you would have others do to you, which makes it a positive framework. But the point is the same, that we would want people to be honest with us. I don't know if you've ever noticed it, but I've been somewhat amused at times when I notice how offended and angry some people get after they lie to somebody, only to find out that they've been lied to. And it's like, well, duh. I remember C.S. Lewis wrote in a book, he was making an argument for the existence of God based on a general common morality all around the world. And the illustration he gave was, even in the most primitive cultures, if people think that it's okay to steal from the neighboring tribe, they still get offended when the neighboring tribe steals from them. And that offense that they feel inside is an indication of a hidden moral law that God has put within each one of us. But it has often amused me at people that think nothing of lying. They'll lie to do anything, to get anything, to accomplish anything. But boy, do they ever get mad and offended if somebody lies to them. Well, that's what the golden rule is all about, isn't it? As we bring this message to a close, I just want to urge all of us to examine our hearts and our lives to see how we measure up to this commandment. How careful are we? How much is honesty and integrity and truthfulness a part of our everyday life and our everyday conversation? Are you truthful in all of your conversation? Do you regularly excuse the use of a lie by calling it just a little fib or a little white lie? I read in one book about a joke that it was in the Peanuts cartoon, I guess. I don't remember exactly how it went, but some Lucy or Charlie Brown or somebody said something to Linus about a white lie, and he said, do lies come in colors? Well, I'm here to tell you, dear friends, they don't come in colors. There's only one color for lie, and I'm pretty sure it's pretty dark. Because the devil is the father of them. There's a lot more that can be said, and maybe we could have discussions and questions about all the different ways to apply this commandment in our lives, but we do need to practice truthfulness in every facet of life so that people know we are characters and individuals that can be trusted. Let's purpose to live that way. Let's stand together and sing our closing song that has been printed for you in the bulletin. Number 154. Let's just sing the first and the last verse.